from the 1998 Heart of Illinois Convention of Home Educators.
I'm going to get started here and give you a bit of information about Sam Blumenfeld. Sam Blumenfeld, the author of Blumenfeld's Alpha Phonics, is a native of New York. Is a native New Yorker who now makes his home in Waltham, Massachusetts. Sam graduated from the City College of New York in 1950 and studied at the Sorbonne in Paris. On his return to the United States, he entered the book publishing industry and went on to become the editor of the Universal Library Quality Paperback Series at Grosset and Dunlap. He served as chairman of the Massachusetts branch of the Reading Reform Foundation for 20 years. Sam has taught in public and private schools and has tutored extensively. In addition, he has been a featured speaker on hundreds of radio programs and has lectured in all 50 states. In 1983, Sam created his phonetic reading system, Alpha Phonics, a primer for beginning readers, which has achieved enormous popularity among homeschoolers in the United States and abroad. His direct, simple, logical method has taught thousands of children and adults to read. In 1997, he expanded this program to include video, audio, lesson tapes, readers, and other learning tools to help in the reading process. Sam is president of the newly established Literacy Unlimited, Inc., which hopes to create a learning revolution in America with its recently revised and enhanced Alpha Phonics reading program. And with that, keeping it very simple, this is Dr. Samuel Blumenfeld. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Mike. Okay. Is this the machine on?
Yeah, and it's the I'm recording.
Okay. How long is that run? It's going to be for... Nothing has been put in there. You want to put in a tape? Okay. The central system. Okay. Well, thank you all for coming to this to my workshop on teaching reading. Of course, as you know, the teaching of reading really is central to everything you're going to do as homeschoolers. So, how many here are? This is your first homeschool convention that you've attended. Well, okay, there are a lot of you who are new to homeschooling, and I want to congratulate you for making the decision to homeschool, because that's very vital for the health and well-being of your children. You may not realize it, but reading failure is part of the agenda of the establishment. If they didn't want, it's not that they don't know how to teach reading, they certainly do. That is the people at the top who have created the present system. It's just that they don't want to. They want to make sure that your children are not readers, because if it's socialism that they want in this country, then they have to dumb down Americans sufficiently so that we will give up our freedoms without even knowing what we've done. And if you can't read, then that's very easy to do. It'll be like taking candy from a baby. That's their object. But literacy has always been important for America from the very beginning. Why? Because they established a Christian commonwealth in the wilderness, and the only way it could be sustained was if everyone could read the Bible. Just simple as that. The basis of high literacy back in the early colonies was the need for biblical literacy, and the Bible is not easy reading. So if you could read the Bible, you could read anything. And so that's why literacy was so important back in those days. Now, as I said, the teaching of reading is very important, and of course the educators have so confused the public that they've led you to believe that you have to be a rocket scientist in order to teach someone to read. It really is not difficult at all if you know how. It's as simple as that. It's not difficult, but they've made it difficult. And with good reason, of course, because they want to make it seem so difficult that no parent could possibly teach a child to read. After all, the teachers in schools don't know how to teach children to read, so why should parents know how to do it? But of course, and I didn't know how to teach a person to read. I went to school, I learned to read very nicely in the first grade and back in the 30s. And went to college, and when I was in college, I decided I wanted to teach my mother to read because she was an illiterate. She was from Europe, had never learned, was never educated, so didn't know how to read. She was a perfectly intelligent person. And so I thought, gee, it ought to be easy enough to teach a person to read. So I taught her the alphabet. And she learned that very nicely. But then I said, now what do I do? And so I began to put words together. My name is Sarah. Sarah is my name. And I had her memorize the words. And she didn't learn. You know, you just can't learn to read by memorizing words. I had no idea about our alphabetic system. I knew that in some vague way that, you know, letters stood for sounds, you know, but I didn't know it in an organized way. I didn't know that we had a system. I knew nothing about that. And so she never learned to read. I was frustrated. She was frustrated. And it was a total failure. Well, in the early 1960s, I suddenly became aware of this reading problem we have in America. I was an editor at Grosset and Dunlap in New York City, and a friend of mine by the name of Watson Washburn, a lawyer, created an organization called the Reading Reform Foundation, and he asked me to become a member of his National Advisory Council. And so I asked him, well, what's the aim of the Reading Reform Foundation? He said, well, it's to get phonics back in the schools. Yeah, I'm sort of surprised. What do you mean get phonics back in the schools? Since when was it taken out? How can you teach someone to read without it? So he suggested that I read Dr. Rudolf Flesch's book, Why Johnny Can't Read, which was published in 1955. That's over 40 years ago. I read it, and suddenly I became aware of this problem of look-say versus phonics. He explained how the professors of education got rid of the intensive phonics, the alphabetic phonics method, and put in this new look-say sight word, whole word method, better known by most of you as the Dick and Jane method. Now, it's true that many who were taught Dick and Jane also learned to read by phonics because they had the older teachers who knew that you simply couldn't learn to read by just Dick and Jane, you know, look, look, see, see, go, go, jump, jump. It wasn't enough. And so they did teach phonics. In those days, it was called bootleg phonics because the teachers had to close the doors and teach phonics. And so, but as the older teachers retired and died off, you had these younger teachers coming out of the teachers' college who never had phonics, had no idea what intensive phonics was. And so they intensified the look, say, whole word method, which then metamorphosed into what we call whole language. And whole language is so much worse than anything that Dick and Jane was promoting. First of all, they said, well, we got to give the kids real literature to read. You know, real stories. The only problem is that Dick and Jane never gave kids nightmares, you know. You couldn't get a nightmare over Sea Spot Run. But now the literature they were giving kids to read, you know, like on cannibalism, New Ageism, scary stuff. Notice all the scary stuff that they're creating for kids. There's a whole series of books on, what's the name of those books? Yeah, the Goosebumps books. I mean, they're frightening the kids to death, having nightmares and that sort of thing. That's the real literature. In any case, when Flesch wrote his book, there was a resurgence of phonics. But the educators were so much against that, they maintained their agenda. Because as I explained earlier, their agenda was set in the early days of this century, and they intended to maintain that gender come hell or high water. They didn't care what parents thought. They didn't care whether phonics worked or not. That was not in their view what they wanted. They wanted to dumb down the public, and the look-say method did a splendid job. It did such a great job that in 1993, the U.S. Department of Education released the results of their study of adult literacy in the United States and discovered that half the adult population have substandard reading skills. 90 million Americans. And of those 90 million, 40 million might as well be illiterate. They're totally functionally illiterate. 40 million Americans. So they've been very successful in getting what they want, a dumbed down semi-literate population. Well, anyway, I wrote several books. I wrote a book, How to Start Your Own Private School, back in the 70s. And that's when I began to look into what was going on in the public schools. And I got a job as a substitute teacher in the public schools of Quincy, Massachusetts. And I was amazed at how poorly the kids read. I said, gee, these kids are reading as if they just got off the boat. like a bunch of foreigners. I mean, they're born in this country and they're stumbling and mumbling and fumbling and guessing words and skipping words and mutilating words, I thought. So I thought I was surprised because I said, well, Rudolf Flesch explained it all in 1955. How come in 1970 they're still having a reading problem? Well, as I explained, the educators had no intention to change anything, and I had no idea why the educators did what they did. Rudolf Flesch thought they did it because they were stupid. But these educators were not stupid men. They were giving out PhDs to everybody else. They were not stupid men. They knew exactly what they were doing. Well, I thought, I'll bring the situation up to date. And so I wrote a book called The New Illiterates, in which I brought the situation, the whole reading problem, up to the 70s. And in that book, I did a line-by-line study of the Dick and Jane program and came to the conclusion that anyone taught to read by that method exclusively would exhibit the symptoms of dyslexia. In other words, the teaching method caused dyslexia. And so in the back of that book, I decided, well, I'd better show parents how to teach children to read. And I did a lot of research on our alphabetic system. I found out that we have 26 letters and how many sounds? How many sounds are there in the English language?
44.
44. Gee, we got a bright audience here. That's the best kept secret in American education, is how many sounds there are in English. And so I figured it out and I thought, what's the best way to teach this? And I said, we'll start with the simplest. And we'll proceed to the more complicated. We'll start with the short vowels and then move on to the blends, the consonant blends, and then finally work on the long vowels. And so I worked out a systematic method of teaching reading. Now, after that book was published, then my publisher asked me to do a book to explain it a little more. I do a more thorough job in it. And he said, why don't you also do one in which you can tell a parent how to teach not only reading, but writing and arithmetic also. So I wrote a book called How to Tutor. And in that little book, you will find how to teach reading, writing, and arithmetic. I have some on sale at my table back in the exhibit hall. Then after that, I began doing tutoring myself. And I realized that little How to Tutor book was too small, the words were so tiny. So I began in large pads that artists use to write out to print out the words in large letters, and that's how I started compiling my alphaphonics book. So it was all based on my experience as a tutor. I began to see, well, what works, what do children need, what helps create what you want, and so I finally developed the alphaphonics program. I got a calligrapher to do it all, and had it published. And that was the Alphaphonics book that has sold for the last 15 years to thousands and thousands of homeschoolers who have used it successfully and have reported to me. I've been, terribly gratified by the wonderful reception that it had. And then I was approached by someone about 3 years ago, and they said, well, why don't you sell your Alphaphonics the way Hooked on Phonics is being sold? You know, you all know of Hooked on Phonics being sold on the radio. And I said, well, tell me how to do it. You know, I'd be glad to do it. And so we worked out a business plan, and I was able to raise the capital so that we were able to produce Alphaphonics in the kit with all of the wonderful things you need, the audio tapes, the flashcards, a little reading books, instruction book, video, flip book, all of the things that would make this into the kind of product that could sell very widely and be very widely used, because I wanted a reading program that could not only be used to teach beginning readers, children, but also one that could be used in remediating an older student. There's so many older kids, because I did a lot of tutoring of these older kids who had to be remediated. See, the problem with the older child is this. What the schools do today is they force the child to develop a holistic reflex. Now, let me explain what a holistic reflex is. They give the child a sight vocabulary to memorize. Now, a sight vocabulary is usually given to a child who has had no phonetic training, very little, if any, phonics. And sometimes they haven't even, memorized the alphabet. But they give them the words to memorize as if they were Chinese characters, a whole configuration. Now, how does a child remember what that word said? He tries to find something in that word that will remind him of it, remind him what it says, through some sort of association. And they give the children sometimes several hundred of these words, so that the child develops this habit, this reflex of looking at each word as a whole configuration. Because and when they do that, they develop an automatic view of words as whole configuration. Look at every little English word as if it were a picture, as if it were a Chinese character. Now, when you do that, you'll see, like for example, a child will see the word dad, or will see the word father, and will say dad, because he's seeing the picture. A child will see the word horse and say pony, because he's seeing some four-legged thing, in that H-O-R-S-E, which doesn't look like a horse. I don't know how a child sees pony there, but he does. Teachers think that's wonderful. But if a child looks at the word horse and says pony, that child can't read. It's as simple as that, You can't read H-O-R-S-E as D-A-D, but yet the educators are delighted because that's a crippled reader, and they're happy. They've crippled another American child, and they love it. Well, anyway, when the children develop this holistic reflex that immediately creates a blockage against seeing our alphabetic words in their phonetic structure. You see, our printed words are made up of letters that stand for sounds. Letters are not pieces of decoration. They actually mean something. Letters stand for sounds. That's what an alphabet system is. You see, prior to the invention of the alphabet, you had the earliest form of writing was pictographs. The cavemen drew pictures on the walls of their caves. You didn't have to go to school to see them because the pictures looked like the things they represented. Human being looked like a human being, an animal looked like an animal. But then as civilization became more complex, the scribes had to begin drawing pictures of things that did not lend themselves to the depiction. I mean, how do you draw pictures of good and evil? How do you draw pictures of right and wrong? You can't. So what do? You make a little symbol and you say, this stands for right and this stands for wrong. Doesn't look like right, doesn't look like wrong, but that's it. And the scribes had to memorize thousands of these little symbols, none of which looked like anything they represented. And we call those things ideographs or logographs. And that's what the Chinese system is. But even the Chinese couldn't invent enough of these little characters, and so they began to use some of the characters for phonetic purposes. In other words, if you see a picture of something, and they would say, well, it sounds like this. It doesn't mean the same thing, but it sounds like it. So the Chinese have a very complex system of ideographs, pictographs, and phonetic symbols. Well, somewhere along the line, around 2000 BC, somebody said to himself, somebody made a remarkable discovery. Somebody discovered that all of human language is composed of a small number of irreducible speech sounds. That was a tremendous discovery. And he said, well, why don't we take a series of symbols to stand for the irreducible speech sounds, and then we'll have a very simple means of transcribing, that is, writing down the spoken word, and a simple means of then of converting the written language back into its spoken form. And so the first alphabet was invented. And of course, one of the first products of the alphabet was the Holy Scripture. Why? Because God speaks to us in words. In the beginning was the Word. And so you had to have an accurate means of transcribing God's Word into printed or written form. And the beauty of alphabetic writing is its precision. H-O-R-S-E stands for horse. You got h-o-r-s. It doesn't stand for dad. Dad is D-A-D. D-A-D. It's as simple as that, So, We had this alphabetic system. Everybody learned to read. The Hebrews learned to read. The Greeks learned to read. The Romans learned to read. Americans learned. Everybody learned by the alphabetic method. And in the old days in the United States, if you go to an antiquarian bookshop, you may find some of the old little primers. You can stick them in your pocket. They're so small. And in them, they went from A. You know, they would, what they would do is teach the sounds, and then they would drill the child in the consonant vowel combinations. May, me, my, mo, mu. Bay, be, by, bo, bu. Ab, eb, ib, ab, ub. Am, em, im, am, ub. The purpose of the drill was to make sure that the children developed a phonetic reflex. Now, a reflex is simply an automatic response to stimuli. A holistic reflex is an automatic response to words as wholes. And when you develop a holistic reflex with an alphabetic system, you're creating conflicting reflexes. So what you want your child to do is develop a phonetic reflex, which means teaching the letters, drilling the letter sounds, and once that child has developed a phonetic reflex, he or she can never become dyslexic. Because the definition of dyslexia is an inability to see the phonetic structure of our words. And here the schools are making the kids develop a holistic reflex, which creates the blockage deliberately. And it's very easy to do. My latest newsletter is entitled Creating Dyslexia. It's as easy as pie. And I had that demonstrated to me the other day. A father brought me his five-year-old child who's in kindergarten, and they think he's having little problems. Well, that child was being given sight words to memorize. And the child had barely, he barely knew the alphabet, barely knew any, and certainly didn't know any of the sounds. I proved to his father that the child could learn to read phonetically. He didn't have to memorize sight words. But the school was making sure that this child memorized a battery of sight words so that the child would get the impression that you have to learn each word as a whole configuration. And so that child was being set on the road to dyslexia. By the end of the first grade, that child would be a basket case. And I showed that to the father, who was rather shocked. But he realized, yeah, that's exactly what they're doing. Now, this whole issue of reflexes was studied by the psychologists. They know what they're doing. Because in 1932, a Soviet psychologist by the name of Alexander Luria wrote a famous book entitled Human Conflicts. And in that book, he showed how the Russian psychologists had done experiments in their laboratories on the artificial creation of behavioral disorganization. Now, the behavioral scientists consider speech to be a form of behavior. Reading is a form of behavior. So behavioral disorganization means artificially creating a dyslexia. So we know they know how to do it. And our schools now are so adept at doing that your average teacher will teach a sight vocabulary, not even knowing that this is going to cause great problems for the kids. Well, anyway, now how did I solve the problem? What I created was a system of teaching reading that would be very easy and very simple. You've got to teach the 26 letters and the 44 sounds. Now, the fact that we have these 44 sounds is a bit of a problem. I mean, why do we have a 26-letter alphabet? Why don't we have a 44-letter alphabet? Well, what happened was that when the Romans conquered the British Islands, they imposed the Latin alphabet on the people there. Now, the people did not speak Latin. They spoke Anglo-Saxon, which was a conglomeration of all kinds of things. It certainly was not, and had many more sounds than Latin. So how do you accommodate 44 sounds to 26 letters? Well, some of the letters are going to have to stand for more than one sound. For example, your letter A stands for at least four different sounds. It stands for long A, as in apron, April, stands for the short A, the A sound, as in cat or bat, stands for the A sound, as in all or ball, and it stands for the A sound, as in car and father. So how does a child know which sound to articulate when he sees the letter A? Well, if you teach the letter sounds you teach the letter sounds in their spelling families, the children have no problem. They learn very well when the A is an A, when the A is a long A, et cetera, et cetera. Also, what we did in English was that for some of the sounds, we used combinations of letters, like for the sh, it's one sound but two letters. We call that a consonant digraph. Or are typically English, th. The th is a digraph, two letters standing for one sound. Now you might say, well, isn't that a terrible thing to use two letters to stand for one sound? How dare you? Well, no, I mean, how many of you know the French word for water? What is it? O. O is a French word for water. Do you know how do you spell O in French?
E-A-U.
There isn't an O in sight. So if you think that the English is bad, try French, you know. Anyway, our alphabetic system is a wonderful system. We've written the world's greatest literature in it. So there's no reason why children should not be taught it. Now what I do is, first I assume that you teach the child the alphabet, but once the child learns the alphabet, then you have to teach the letter sound. So I start first with the short A, and teach the child that the short A, this letter stands for A. So the child learns that this is A, and then I teach them the sounds of five consonants, the M, N, S, T, and X. Now, what's the sound of M? Hmm. N, S, T, and X, it's really a combination of KS. That's a secret. Don't let anyone know. Don't let your child know. Just say X. Anyway, so we put them together. A, M, gives you M. A, M, gives you N. A, S, gives you AS. Act, act. X, X. Now, you can ask the child, you know, what you can do is then describe the words that, you know, I am going to the store. I asked this little child, I said, do you know what the, have you ever heard the word an? And he said, no. I said, well, listen to this. I have an apple. Oh, you know, he had heard the word, but never dawned on him when he sees it like this, you know. So you teach vocabulary. Ask him, does he know what an axe is? Most kids know what an axe is, you know. Then what we do is we take this, those few letters that they've learned and those few simple words, and then we take this, the S and put it in front of am, and you get s-am. M in front of an gives you m-an. We introduce the letter H, which stands for, what is the sound of the letter H? Right. Has, sat, and tax. If the child doesn't know what a tax is, you just tell him because he's going to be paying it for the rest of his life. Well, then in lesson three, we're already developing the spelling families, which I said was so important. Am, Sam, and man, as, has, at, sat, at, tax, axe, tax. And they can already read two sentences made up of just those sounds and those words. Those letters, Sam sat, Sam has an axe. Well, that gives a child a tremendous sense of accomplishment. Usually they can do all of that in one session. Those first three lessons can be done in one session. And so, wow, mommy, I'm reading. You know, that's the moment of discovery, you know. Well, then we teach the rest of the consonants with the short A, and we stick with the short A because we want them to learn the consonants. Now, yeah, you can do it different ways. There are many ways to teach phonics. I do it this way because I want to make it simple, easy, and teach things that the child can absorb easily. And so I teach short A with all of the consonants, and the spelling families grow. For example, we have add, when you add D, you have add, had, dad, sad, tad, mad. In the as family, you have as, has, and then you have W-A-S. Now that's, you know, a child will say was, and you'll say, no, there is no such word as was, it's was. Oh, it was. Okay, it was. Now, they're not going to ask you why. Generally, they don't. But if they do, you just say, well, it was. I don't know why it was. It just was, you know. There is no word as was, and kids learn it pretty well. And in other words, they begin to see that the system is not 100% consistent. Well, why should it be? You're not 100% consistent, you know. So why should the alphabet be consistent? Anyway, then we teach the sentences grow in number. And once we finish with the short A, we give them plenty of drill. And the purpose of the drill is to create the automaticity, the phonetic reflex. So we give them add, ack, ab, and then, you know, bab, back, back, bad, baff. Now they learn a lot of nonsense syllables, like the word baff. I mean the syllable baff. Well, that'll turn up later in a multisyllabic word, like baffle, you know. Bal will turn up in balance. Bam in Alabama, you know, Bap in Baptist. So what they're learning is what they will be using for the rest of their lives, because we generally read in syllabic units. That's how we take apart multisyllabic words, is that we break it apart into syllabic units, which is a syllable is a single unit of speech with one vowel sound. It can have as many consonants, but only one vowel sound. And that's how we create our syllabic system. Well then, and incidentally, when they finish lesson 14, they can read their first little book. And this little book is just words with short A. Just short A words. Then, in the next lesson, after all of that drill, they are taught the rest of the short vowels. A, E, I, A, U. When I was going to school, we memorized that. A, E, I, A, U. A, E, I, A, U. You ask today's people, what's a short E, and they look at you. Short E? I don't know, you know. Short I, you know, but, huh? Oh, that's right. A short E is a small, you know, short E. But anyway, they learn, and you teach them the contrasting bad, bad, bid, bod, bud, a bud, bob, bud, etc. And that's how we teach the rest of the short vowels. We do plenty of drill. Drill is very important. Of course, drill is out of fashion with these schools because that's rote learning. And rote learning is a form of child abuse, you know. But rote learning is absolutely essential. That's the only way you develop a reflex. You see, there's method behind their madness. They say, oh, rote learning is out. Why? Because they don't want the child to develop a phonetic reflex. That's the only way you develop a reflex, is by rote learning. And the reflex is very important because it permits you to read without having to think of what the letters are. Now, at the beginning, your child will be sounding out every letter, you know, like ku, a, tu. I had a mother come in, well, how can I get him to stop saying ku, a, tu? I said, you don't have to do anything. He'll eventually get tired of saying ku, a, tu, and he'll just say cat. You know, don't worry about it. Parents, you know, patience. Patience, because this is a learning process. It's not easy to learn our alphabetic system. So it's just have patience. Eventually they get there. Now, we teach, for example, we don't teach any sight words. There's no need to teach sight words in English. There are a few one-of-a-kind words, but they are not sight words. Take the word eye, E-Y-E. That's not a picture of two eyes and a nose in the middle. It's a phonetic symbol. And the reason why I is spelled E-Y-E is because we've got three I's in English. You've got capital I, first person I. Then you have I, sir, A-Y-E. And then you have E-Y-E. So this was a way of making it possible for us to know of which I we're talking about when you see it written. We introduce in lesson 21, TH. All of the sentences prior to that had no the in them. Oh, you didn't use the? Well, why? Why use the if you haven't taught TH? So when we teach TH, we have that, than, the, them, then, this, thin, thick, etc. Bath, math, etc. Then we teach all of the consonant blends. The beginning consonant blends, the final consonant blends. A blend is really just two consonant sounds that are blended together. Take, for example, you know, best, B-E-S-T, b-e-s-t. A lot of people think that's one sound. It's actually a blending of two consonant sounds, best. And you have to teach the child that b-e-s-t in that sequence is best. If it's b-e-t-s, it's bets. B-E-T-S, you see. So the proper, learning the proper sequence of letters is very important. You know, like, there's so many people in the ghetto who say, ax me. Ax no questions, you know. It's not A-K-S, it's A-S-K. But they're not taught spelling in our schools. They're not taught letter sounds in our schools, so they don't know ax from ask. That's why you have this language problem in the ghetto, in the black community, because they're all learning Ebonics now. Because they're not being taught English. Because the schools want an underclass that will be dissatisfied and that will create problems and riot and burn. Frustrated kids. They need that for part of their revolution, to scare us all into doing what they want, doing what the elite want. Children who can read are not going to go around burning houses down. An awful lot of the damage being done to schools today by children are students who have never learned to read and are so frustrated they hate the school. Why do you think there's so many kids shooting up schools these days? That never happened when I was going to school. When I was going to school, we loved our teachers. Why? They were teaching us in the right way. It was rational. They taught us all to read, all to write. And we were satisfied. We loved them. They were up on pedestals. The schools were immaculate. Today they're full of graffiti, things are on the floor, because the teachers are irrational, using faulty teaching methods, educational malpractice that creates dyslexia, reading disability. And when you have reading disability, what do they do to you? You know, you become unruly in the class. How do they handle that problem? Drug the little you-know-whats. Yeah. Anyway, we teach all of that. By lesson 38, they can read two-syllable words like hot dog, box top, all short vowels. Visit, linen, nitwit. If your child asks you what's a nitwit, you say, President Clinton. He's a nitwit. Or Hillary, whichever you want to use. Anyway, we go through all of that, and finally we come to the long vowels. Now, why do we save the long vowels for the last third of the book? It's because long vowels are written in many different ways. There are many different spellings to the long vowels. For example, the most common way of writing long A is A consonant E. And I give all the different examples, you know, and all the different spelling forms. A second way we write long A is AI. You know, for example, you have Maine and Maine. M-A-N-E is the mane on a horse's mane. M-A-I-N is Main Street. Two ways of writing Maine. There's actually even a third way, M-E-I-N, Chow Mein. You've been in a restaurant, Chinese restaurant, Chow Mein is M-E-I-N. So there are three ways of writing Maine. But here we use that, we give them the A-I. Then long A is also written as A-Y, as in day, bay. Also, it's written as EY, as in such words as they and obey. It's also written as EI, as in rain, or main, as in shall main, EI. There isn't an A in sight. EI stands for A, long A in those words. You have to know which words they are. EIGH stands for A. Four letters, EIGH, stand for one sound, A. Just as I showed you in French, EAU stands for O. In words like where you have that particular spelling form. So that's the reason why we save the long vowels to the end, because you've got so many different spellings. And then there are other vowel sounds in English. We have oi, ow, and they have to be learned also. In fact, we have about 20 vowel sounds in English, 10 of which are short and long, and then we've got all these others. And you have to teach them in a systematic way. You want to teach them our entire English alphabetic system, which is what I do in Alphaphonics. And that's why it's been so successful, is because children want to learn that way. If you notice, no pictures, no Mickey Mouse, no singing, no dancing, no songs, no music. If they want, they can use their imaginations, you know. The little books also, no pictures in the books. Why? Because pictures are a distraction. The minute the kid looks at the picture, he's going to try to read by equating the picture with what's on the page. So you don't want that. All that does is delay learning. Why delay learning, you know? So that's the system that we've done. We've put everything on audio tape so that is, if you as a parent has never had phonics, all you have to do is listen to the audio tapes. Every lesson is gone over. So this is also good for adult non-readers. If you happen to know an adult non-reader who would like to learn to read but is a little embarrassed and doesn't want to go to a local literacy clinic or something like that, this is a perfect way to do it. It also comes with flashcards, which the purpose of a flashcard is simply to increase the speed of recognition of the words, you know. It comes with the instructions are in a separate booklet so that the parent can read the instructions as the child is going through the lessons. We also have a little flip book where the child can make up his own little words, you know. What do we have? CAD. And this is a cute little thing where they can learn. That's not a very nice word. Well, that's the risks you take in teaching a child to read. You know, when they're out in the world, they can read anything they want, you know, so. But it's a fun little thing. Anyway, do you have any questions? That's about it. Yes?
Yes. When you teach, you said at the beginning you teach the alphabet first, then you go into the sounds. Do you actually teach the letter A, the letter B, instead of the sound of the letter? Because some phonics methods, they suggest don't teach the alphabet A, B, C.
Yeah, there's some dispute over whether you should teach the sounds of the letters and not the names of the letters. I believe that you should teach the names of the letters simply so that you can identify the letters, you know. I have had nobody complain to me about that. I've never had a parent come up to me and say, oh, well, you shouldn't teach the letter names. Teach the letter names, nothing wrong with that. Yes, ma'am.
I started teaching phonics to when my little boy's five now, when he was two.
Mm-hmm.
And I did teach the letters as well, but that wasn't my focus.
Right.
So when he went to pre-K this past year, he started going backwards in his, you know, reading and everything. And talked to
his... Is he in school?
He just preschool.
Yeah, but it's still a school. Is it a public or private?
Private.
Uh-huh.
I'm taking him out.
good.
But
you have to.
I went to a conference with her.
Right.
And she said, well, he doesn't know a couple of the letters. And I said, well, he's known his phonics since he was, you know, almost a toddler. You know,
right.
Probably when he sees some of these letters like A, he sees A.
Right.
And
you see, that's the problem.
She was teaching him sight words, and he didn't know them. And she
sight words.
She looked at me really strange when I told her about the phonics thing. And then he started showing signs of dyslexia in his reading and writing. And I was really worried about him. I thought there was something wrong with him. And he said that about
dyslexia. Yeah, the sight words,
that
sure.
That was really validating for me.
Yeah. So. He's being turned into a dyslexic by the methods. Now, many of the teachers don't know that this is what's happening. They've simply been told by their professors, oh, you must teach a sight vocabulary. And so they do it unknowingly. Because after all, they're not going to see the results. The results will show up in the third grade, not in the first grade. They'll be happy if the child can memorize 100 words. They'll say, oh, that's wonderful. They don't realize that that's going to create a real obstacle by the time the child's in the third grade and has to start reading a much larger vocabulary than the child is stuck, you see. Yes?
I have a daughter who is just finishing up elementary education training.
Yeah.
Going to schools. In the classes where she's observed so far, her position as an observer has been lessened by the fact that she's been sitting at the backs of these rooms teaching the children how to read by using phonics.
Mm-hmm.
She went through school to third or fourth grade, and I took her out and taught her at home, and we started with phonics, that she's teaching under, explaining to them that if you don't teach these children phonics, you're going to have continual bad luck.
Oh, yes.
What you're doing, because your whole language is nothing. And it's been a real affirmation for all of us to watch her try to tutor children and have them come up the level right away,
mm-hmm.
simply by tutoring them with phonics.
Yeah. Incidentally, concerning the Alpha Phonics, the retail price is $239, but at this convention, we're selling it at a special convention price of $189.95. So you'll save $50 if you buy it at the convention and also save the shipping costs. Yes, ma'am.
When would you and how do you teach spelling then?
Well, this book teaches spelling because it teaches all of the letter sounds and their spelling families. So your child will learn to spell very nicely because as the child is reading, the child is writing the words also and gets to understand the rhyming patterns in the spelling families.
So you don't necessarily have to have a special...
Well, this is teaching spelling. It's after you complete this, if you want to then learn spelling of multisyllabic words, where you get into vocabulary development. This teaches you the mechanics of reading. Beyond this, you're teaching English. You're teaching grammar. You're expanding vocabulary, you see. All this does is get you on the right road. And of course, you learn a lot of vocabulary because there are an awful lot of words here that the average child might not know. I mean, just by learning the all of the, you know, like a word like, you have print, prod. Child may not know what prod is or prong or prop. He can read it, but he may not know. So you are already dealing with vocabulary, even at this very elementary stage, simply because they know how to pronounce the word, but they want to know what it means. And you cannot assume that children know the meanings of some what we think are common words, you know. Yes, ma'am.
I'm in a fight with my son who's 7 months old. How do I know if he is what we call a late bloomer and is having a hard time catching on? Or if he has some kind of disability.
He's 8?
He's almost 8. He'll be 8 in July. And some days he'll do great and we're up to like 3-letter words.
Right.
And then the next day he can't even remember his letters.
Well, what program are you using?
It's called Intensive Phonics.
Yeah.
Lockhart.
Oh, yeah, I know Charlotte. Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know what... usually... That's why drill is so important, because they do forget from day to day. It's a memory thing. It's a reflex thing, and you can only do that by constant repetition. So that if the child doesn't remember what happened yesterday or 2 weeks ago, all you do is repeat it. That's the only thing you can do is just say the word again, and then have him do it until he memorizes the letters and the letter sounds and that sort of thing. I'd say that was the problem there is just a memory problem, that he doesn't retain very much, and that you just simply have to keep going over and over and over again until he gets it, and do it in a way that at least is not unpleasant. You know, children love alpha phonics because it's so easy and so logically organized, because you must remember that children are born with logical minds. Now, how do we know that? They learn to speak. They learn to speak all by themselves, and they learn to speak grammatically. Yeah, they may make a little few mistakes at the beginning, but basically, children learn to speak grammatically. Why? Because of the brain's logic. All that grammar is the logic of language, that's all. So we know that children have this innate logic. And so if you teach them reading in a logical way, that's very compatible with their basic brain patterns of learning. And it's very important that you want your child's learning patterns to be very well established so that they develop healthy brain patterns of learning and of knowing. Because one of the things that a dyslexic has is a faulty, deformed brain pattern. And they know it's deformed because they've made these scannings of brains of adult dyslexics, and they've seen that brain is different from a normal reader's brain, from a phonetic reader's brain. So in other words, those methods of teaching actually lead to deformation of brain patterns in learning, which then show up later on in brain scans. Yes, ma'am.
I just started teaching and reading, and I started with the sight work, but also with phonics. And now that you pointed that out, I can see that I totally confused him.
Yeah, yeah.
When he goes to read, he reads, trying to read the sight word.
Yes.
But then, like at the end, he'll catch the phonics part.
Right.
How do I undo?
Well, first of all, don't teach any more sight words. And I would start at the beginning again. with Alpha Phonics. I would start that with that. That's the way I, at least I know what this does. I don't know what the other programs do. I know what some of them do. I mean, some of them, you know, have songs and all of that, but then the kids learn to sing, but they may not learn to read, you know. Yes, ma'am.
Is this type of program able to be used, like with a hard of hearing or deaf child?
It depends on how deaf the child is, what kind of a hearing problem you have.
Moderate to severe.
Because they do have to learn to, they do have to learn to read phonetically if they're going to become good readers. And I don't know, is she being taught by signs or articulation?
No, we're doing sign and articulation both.
Yeah.
I've got her home, but she's about 2.5, and they want to place her in a deaf school. If I don't teach her home, and I've decided to keep her home and teach her at home, but I'm just not real sure where to start.
Well, you know, there's this big debate among the teachers of the deaf whether to teach signs or articulation. I believe that if she's only limited to signs, she'll only be able to communicate with other deaf kids.
Right. We're trying to do that.
If she has articulation, she'll be able to talk with anybody, you see. So that's why I would use articulation. And then maybe later on some signs so that she can actually talk to other deaf people with whom she may have much something in common, you see. Are we at the end of this session now?
This is the end of the session. Thank you for attending.